The Bible has a number of things to say about mothers. Of course, it talks in Genesis chapter 3, verse 20, about the very first. And it says in chapter 3, verse 20, it says, "And Adam called his wife's name Eve, because she was the mother of all living." Anybody ever trace your ancestry? Find out who you were a descendant of? You know, the Bible gives long genealogies in there, and there are some people that really get into the genealogy, and they can say, "Well, you know, my ancestors came over on the Mayflower, and my ancestors did this or that, and so on," because they want to trace them all the way back. Well, hey, according to that, my ancestry goes all the way back to Eve. It says she was the mother of all living. So if you want to really impress somebody, you can say, "Well, my ancestry goes all the way back to the very first woman." Because it does. She was the first mother. And we're not going to really talk a lot about Eve because it doesn't tell us a whole lot about the raising of the children. We know that she had two sons and one killed the other because of jealousy, because God accepted the other one's offering and didn't accept his. And then they had another son that it talks about. We also know, though, that they had probably many other sons and daughters. And thus the earth got populated. But Eve was the mother of all living. And so she's the first mother that's mentioned in the Bible. But there are some that God specifically deals with here. And in Exodus, the book of Exodus, we're talking about a mother there. And you know, mothers a lot of times have to make great sacrifices for their children. Moms, have you run into that? That there were times you had to make sacrifices for your children? You know, you sometimes had to do something that you really didn't want to have to do for your children, because you had to make that sacrifice. Maybe you went without something because of your children, or maybe other things occurred that you had to do that were a sacrifice to you to help your children have a better life and to have better things. And in Exodus chapter 2, verses 2 and 3, we want to read about a mom here. And it says, "And the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months." How many of you moms ever hid your babies for 3 months? "I'm not going to let anybody see my kid." You know, man, most of you probably the first chance you got, as soon as that baby was born, you took that baby out and showed him or her off. I remember when Melody was born in Germany, and we didn't have any family there, you know, because it was in the military, and we took her home from the hospital. We made a stop at somebody's house on the way home from the hospital to show her to them. It was some people that we went to church with, and so we stopped by there. "You got to see our baby," you know. We couldn't show her to grandma or grandpa right then. So we had to stop and show her to somebody. And that's the way we are. We get excited when our child is born, and we want to show them to somebody. You know, "This is my kid." And it doesn't matter if that baby is as ugly as can be. We think it's the most beautiful child that ever graced the face of the earth, you know. Yeah. You know. But we want to see him. We want people to know we've got this child. "Oh, this is my child. This is my child." But she hid her baby for 3 months. Doesn't sound right, does it? But yet we know that there was a decree that went out that all the male children of the Hebrews was to be killed. And she didn't want her son killed. She wanted her son to live. She wanted her son to grow up and live to a ripe old age. So she hid him. And finally the time came when she couldn't hide him any longer. So the Bible tells us that she made a little basket, or ark as it calls in there, bulrushes, and she took him down to the river, and she put him in the river, and she put him in the river at just the right spot where he'd be found. Now, she didn't put him in the river and say, "I hope that he floats down river somewhere and maybe somebody will find him." She took him someplace and put him in the river where she knew he would be found. She also left his older sister there to watch out and make sure that nothing happened to him. And of course, most of us know the story, and he was found almost immediately by who else? Pharaoh's daughter. The very man that had ordered this child to be killed, his daughter found him in the basket. Took him and her house raised him as her son. But you see, think about the mom. She had to make a great sacrifice there. I want my child to live. And if I have to, I'll let somebody else raise him so that he may live. But you know, God blessed her because guess what? When Pharaoh's daughter found this baby, well, like most rich folks, she needed a nanny. And guess who pops up out of the bulrushes? Hey, I see you found a baby there. Do you need a nanny? I know somebody. And she runs home and gets mama. So God allowed Moses' mother to raise her son, even though she couldn't raise him as her son. But she still got the privilege of being able to raise him. And I'm sure that she instilled many things into him. Because if he had only been instilled in the ways of Egypt, he would have not, when he got older, suddenly realized, those are my people out that are being abused. Those are my people that are being mistreated. And took the steps and actions that he did. Because the Bible tells us the day came that Moses decided he no longer wanted to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Now here's a guy that was really had a lot of opportunity, because at that time Pharaoh of Egypt was probably the most powerful man on the face of the earth. And he had position, he had opportunity, he had education, he had all that the world at that time could offer. And he says, I'm going to turn my back on this. Why? Because I believe the training and the nurture that his mother gave him, even though she had to do it as his nanny, she instilled it into him. And one day it clicked into place. And he said, this is what I've got to do. Raising our children from the time that they're little tiny babies, such as Addison is right now, or these other two little children that are here this morning, or Samuel, if we raise them, we instill knowledge into them. And sometimes we think it goes in one ear and right out the other, because we tell them something and you ask them, duh, what was it? You know, I know Mary teaches Samuel back there in Sunday school class sometimes, and you ask him right after it's over with, and he'll tell you something totally different. Because his mind is somewhere else. He's out slaying dragons or something of that nature, you know. But yet, it's kind of funny, and I'm going to tell on them, but during this past week, his mama did something, and he went in and said, Mama, God's keeping record, because Grammy had taught him in Sunday school class that God keeps a record of the things that you do. And she thought when he left here, he didn't retain any of it, but he did. And we even asked him the other day, I believe it was yesterday maybe, Sammy, what's God doing? He's keeping record. He knows. So see, it sticks with them. We may not realize it sometimes, but every action you take makes an impression upon their life. And let's face it, folks, most of the impressions that very young children get, they really get from their moms, because they're around their mothers more than they are their fathers sometimes. So mom, you have an important thing and duty to do to make an impression upon your child so that they will go in the way that the Lord would want them to go. Here's an interesting one that's mentioned in the Bible, two mothers. In the book of 1 Kings chapter 3. 1 Kings chapter 3. Even bad women sometimes want good things for their kids. Oh, the Bible tells us that there came two women, they were harlots. And the king stood before him. And the one woman said, Oh, my lord, I and this woman dwell in one house, and I was delivered of a child with her in the house. And it came to pass the third day after that I was delivered, that this woman was delivered also. And we were together. There was no stranger with us in the house, save we two in the house. So there were two women and two children, two babies. And this woman's child died in the night because she overlaid it. That means she rolled over on top of it and she smothered it, basically. And she arose at midnight and took my son from beside me while thine handmaid slept, and laid it in her bosom, and lay her dead child in my bosom. And when I rose in the morning to give my child suck, behold, it was dead. But when I had considered it in the morning, behold, it was not my son, which I did bear. I'll stop there just a moment. Mother, you know who your child is. No question about it. Women that have identical twins, they know which one's which. I don't know how they do it, but they know. Man, I'd have to put an ankle bracelet or something on them, you know, to ever know the difference sometimes. But they know. This one's such and such. And women that have triplets, they know which one's which because they know their child. And she says, I looked, and that wasn't my child. That wasn't my child. She had laid her dead child there. And the other woman said, nay, but the living is my son, and the dead is thy son. And this said, no, but the dead is thy son, and the living is my son. Back and forth. No, the living one's mine. No, the living one's mine. No, the dead one's yours. The dead one's there. No, back and forth, bickering back and forth. And thus they spake before the king. Then said the king, the one saith, this is my son that liveth, and thy son is dead. And the other saith, nay, but thy son is dead, and my son is the living. And the king said, bring me a sword. And they brought a sword before the king. Boy, imagine moms, both of them. What is he up to? Bring me a sword. Now, I know that Sammy back there thinks a sword solves a lot of problems right now. You know? Bring me a sword. And that's the child. And the king says, Deliah, divide the living child in two and give half to the one and half to the other. That fixes the problem. Just cut that kid in half. Give one to each one of the women and they can go their way. Sound like a solution? Well, I don't think any one of us would really think that was a very good solution. Would any of you? No. Half a child's not too good. You know? But here's what happened. Then spake the woman whose the living child was unto the king, for her bowels yearned upon her son. I know, don't you love old English? What does that really mean? It means that she had compassion. She had tender love. She had great mercy. She had great pity for that child. And she said, oh, my Lord, give her the living child and no wise slay it. Because you see, she was moved with compassion for her child. And she said, I'd rather have the other woman raise my child than for it to be slain. Give it to her if need be. But don't do this. And so goes on to say, but the other said, let it be neither mine nor thine, but divide it. Now, isn't that the tender, loving heart of a mother? Go ahead, cut it in half. We need everyone get it then. Well, don't you think that the king had a pretty easy job then of deciding who was the real mom? I know the Bible tells us that King Solomon was a very wise man. And probably it was wisdom there that caused him to say, bring the sword and do this. But I think any one of us could have determined right at that point who the real mother was. Wouldn't have taken Einstein to decide. The one who said, if necessary, give it to the other woman, but don't slay it. And you would know that she was the real mom because she had that love for her child. Y'all, here in Tennessee, boy, I'm getting southern, aren't I? Y'all. A few years back when we had one of the tornadoes and this one woman threw herself on top of her child to protect it during the tornado. As a result, she ended up paralyzed, but her child survived unharmed. She did that to protect and to save her child. You see, a loving mother will go through extraordinary lengths to protect and nurture her child. The Bible gives a number of examples of mothers who pleaded for their sons or their daughters. And here's just an example in the New Testament of a woman that's pleading for her child. And sometimes, moms, your heart just reaches out because you don't even know sometimes what to do for your child, but you'll look for whatever means it takes to help your child. Especially if your child is sick or they've got some problem, you'll go to great lengths to try to find something to help that child. And the Bible tells us in Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 through 28, it says, "And Jesus went thence as was departed into the coast of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Cana came out of the same coast and cried unto him, saying, Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil. But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and besought him, saying, Send her away. She crieth after us." Now, if we were to translate that in today's language, they would have said, "Jesus, get rid of her. She's bugging us. She's annoying us. Just get rid of her." But that didn't stop her. You know, some people, he said no, he didn't say anything, I'm going to go. But no, she wasn't about to give up. Because it says, "But he answered and said, I am not sent but to the lost sheep. But he answered and said, I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then came she and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. And he answered and said, It is not meet to take the children's bread and to cast it to the dogs." It's pretty harsh. And she said, "Truth, Lord, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Jesus, the dogs get fed by the crumbs that fall from the master's table. And Jesus answered and said unto her, "Woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt." And her daughter was made whole from that very hour. I want to read that same verse from the Jewish New Testament. I want to start with just verse 25. It says, "But she came and fell at his feet, saying, Sir, help me. He answered, It is not right to take the children's food and toss it to their pet dogs." Why should I give you anything? It's not right to take food and give it to the pet dogs if it belongs to the children. Because what did the Jews think of certain groups of people? They considered them as dogs. We're going to give food to the dogs. It's not right to give food to the dogs. But she said, "That is true, sir. But even the dogs eat the leftovers that fall from their master's table." Then Yeshua answered her, "Lady, you are a person of great trust. Let your desire be granted." And her daughter was healed that very moment. Now, if you look at it in many ways there, this lady, to some extent, endured, you might say, verbal abuse there. "It's not right for me to do anything for you because you're considered as a dog." But she was willing to get down on her knees and grovel if necessary and say, "But sir, even the dogs get the crumbs. And surely, Jesus, I could have just a crumb for my daughter. Because I know that just a crumb from you would bring healing to my daughter." Now, Jesus, I don't believe, was a verbally abusive person. And I don't want anybody to misunderstand and think that I said that Jesus was verbally abusive. But I think he was making a point here. you know, everybody around me is going to say, because my disciples have already said, get rid of her, for she's bugging us. I mean, after all, she's a Canaanite here. Send her home, you know. He's making a point there. Everyone is entitled to a blessing from God if they come before him in the right spirit and the right admonition. She's saying, sir, please, my daughter, my daughter. And she endured what a lot of people would not have gone through. You know, a lot of us, if we would go someplace and we got insulted, we'd turn around and walk away. Well, I'll just go find somebody else. But she's saying, Jesus, I know you can bring it. And even if it's just a crumb of healing, that'll be enough. But for my daughter's sake. And then, of course, there was the most famous mother of all. Anybody have any idea who that would be? Mary. All right. The book of Luke, chapter 1, and I want to read this from the Complete Jewish Bible. It says, in the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a city in Galilee called Nazareth, to a virgin engaged to a man named Joseph of the house of David. The virgin's name was Miriam. Approaching her, the angel said, Shalom, favored lady. Adonai is with you. And she was deeply troubled by his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. I mean, let's face it, moms, an angel walked up to you and said, Shalom. Unless, you know, and you knew it was an angel. How might you feel? Might you be a little nervous? I know some people, oh man, if an angel walked up to me right now, I'd shake his hand and say, howdy, you know. Well, if truth be, if an angel walked up us, a lot of us would be quaking in our boots because we really wouldn't know what's going on. So she's a little bit concerned. What's going on here? What kind of a message is he bringing? And the angel said to her, don't be afraid, Miriam, for you have found favor with God. He goes on in verse 31 to tell her what type of a child she was to have. He says, look, you will become pregnant. You will give birth to a son, and you are to name him Yeshua. He will be great. He will be called the son of Ha-Elyon. Adonai, God, will give him the throne of his forefather David, and he will rule the house of Jacob forever. There will be no end to his kingdom. Miriam, you're going to have a child, and he's going to be the son of the Most High God, and he's going to rule on the throne of his forefather David, and his kingdom will endure forever. Boy, what a message she got there. And how old was she at that time? Well, a lot of people think that she was probably somewhere between 14 and 16 years of age. Not very old. And to get a message like that. You're going to have a child. He's going to be a special child. So here she is, knowing now that this child that she's going to have is going to be a special child. Can you think of what must have gone through her mind as the angel has told her this? You're going to have a son, the child of the Most High God. He's going to rule on the throne of David. His kingdom's going to last forever. Man, what about this? And can you imagine what it must have been like trying to raise this flesh and blood son of Yahweh God? I mean, you've got this child, you know he's the son of God. I mean, the rest of the world might not accept it at that point, and they might not know it, but you know that this is the son of the Most High God. And you've got the responsibility and the duty to raise that child. And yet, I kind of imagine Jesus was pretty much like a normal child at each age step. He ran and he played. Probably found little toys that he played with, and I who knows? I don't know all the games that they played during that day, those days, but he probably played some of the little games that they played and all that stuff, and just was an ordinary kid, you know? Now, the question of obviously is going to come up, did Jesus ever get in trouble? Did he ever need to be disciplined? I don't know. Doesn't say. But here it's her responsibility to raise this child. And she has to raise him through some trying times because, you see, by the time he was 2 years old, they had to flee the country to save his life. Because an angel came and warned them that King Herod was going to try to kill him. And in Matthew chapter 2, verse 16, we read, "Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceedingly wroth, and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem, and all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise man." We got to leave town. We got to get out of Dodge, so to speak. We got to go somewhere else where this king can't find us because he wants to kill our son. And he's going to great lengths. He'll kill any other kid, male child that's 2 years of age or younger, just to try to make sure that he gets our son. And so they fled, lived in exile for a period of time to keep Jesus safe, this child that she was given the duty of raising. And I know a lot of people don't seem to really realize that Jesus was 2 years old roughly when this happened. That when the wise men came, he wasn't in the manger anymore. And I know we show our Christmas cards and we do our Christmas plays and we have them all showing up at the manger to give him gifts and stuff. And Mary and I have a picture that she pulled out of the trash at an antique store years ago. And the picture in itself, the way it's made, is a process that's not even used anymore. And it's an embossed type picture of a paper pulp like stuff. So we keep it up all year round. But it is the wise men coming to give gifts to Jesus. And they're not coming to the stable, they're coming to a house. And the child it shows in the picture is approximately 2 years of age, as they show it there. But a lot of people don't realize that Jesus was 2 years old when this happened. So there was this thing that they had to go through. And then, of course, they finally found out that Herod had died. It was safe to go back. And they go back, and time goes on. And then guess what happens? Jesus gets up to that age of 12. Precocious age. And it says, "Then when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast." Jesus were going up to Jerusalem to the feast, Passover. And they went along, family group. After all, by that time, they probably had other children. The Bible talks about that. And don't know how many, but they had others. And there was family and friends that all went together. I mean, a lot of folks traveled together back then. You know, it was a fun time. You know, we traveled together. After all, you couldn't go very many miles in a day anyway. It wasn't like today where we could go 5,000 miles in a day. You go a few miles in a day and then have to camp out for the night and whatever. But a fun time. And they're on their way to the Feast of the Passover, and they go through the ceremony and all of Passover and all these things, and time comes to go back home, and they pack up the family and everything, and they head back home. Now, I don't think anybody here has that large of a family as what they might have had then, but did anybody ever go somewhere, pack up the family, head back somewhere else, and realize finally somewhere along the way, you forgot one of them? Oh, I see somebody laughing.
We left my little brother
at my uncle's house. Yeah. Yeah. I remember years ago we were at church and this family, it was a large family, came to the church and everybody's leaving, and all of a sudden we realize there's a kid at the church that we don't know. His mom and dad, who were visitors that night, packed up all the other kids, I think there were 9 of them, and took off and left one of them. And I think they finally realized it and came back. Well, this is kind of what happened here. I know we laugh about it, but can you imagine? You're looking around and, where's Jesus? I thought he was with you. No, I thought he was with them. No, he's with them. And they go around the camp and nobody can find Jesus. Uh-oh. Well, what's there to do? And you know, that's a scary thought. It's a terrifying thought. We went to the beach one time years ago, and Katrina was little, and Melody was supposed to have been keeping an eye on her a little bit, and I looked out at the ocean for a moment, and Katrina disappeared. And I searched, and I searched, and I searched. And I thought, did she get swept away by a wave? And I'm panicking. I can't find this child. And finally, she comes running back up the beach, just all as, you know, she decided to wander off somewhere. You know, but it's a terrifying thought when you've lost one of your kids, you know. And I imagine there was a little bit of panic went on in their hearts, right? And where is he? We've lost him. And so what's to do but to pack up and head back to Jerusalem? And so they head back. By now, it's been a couple of days. And it says, and we'll read it here, starting with verse 43 of Luke. It says, and when they had fulfilled the days, as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinsfolks and acquaintances. And they found him not, and they turned back again to Jerusalem, seeking him. And it came to pass after 3 days. Can you imagine? 3 days they're looking for him. Moms, would that have been a panic? You've been frantic. I don't care how hard a time your kid gives you, you'd be frantic. I can't find my child. And they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. I'll stop there. Just here he is, 12 years old. He's sitting in the temple. And we have a picture out here in the front of the church of Jesus as a 12-year-old standing in the temples having a discourse with the rabbis, the learned leaders of his day. Not only listening to them, but instructing them. And it says, and when they saw him, they were amazed. His mother said unto him, son, why have you dealt thus with us? Jesus, why did you scare us half to death? You know? That's, you know, when you get that feeling, when you find them, you know, you want to beat them. You want to beat them and you want to hug them at the same time, you know. Why did you do this to me? You know? They were frantic. Why did you do it? She goes on to say, behold, thy father have sought thee, sorrowing. And if you look that up to see what it has to say in the Greek, it means we've been in anguish. We've been sorrowful. We've been in torment for these last 3 days, not knowing where you were at. Of course, Jesus goes on to explain to them he's doing his father's business. But she went through some trying times there as a mom. And yet, some years later, she's standing on a hillside at the foot of a cross. And her son, who's now 33 years of age, is hanging there between two thieves, two men who deserve to be there. And can you imagine what was going through her mind and her heart, her emotions at that point? Knowing that this is her son, but also knowing that He is the Son of God. Knowing that His Father sent Him to fulfill a purpose. And that purpose was to give His life for the sins of the world. But even knowing that, can you imagine the agony that she was going through in her own spirit? Because that's her baby. That's her child. And Emily, when Addison is 50 years old, I don't know how old you'll be, but she'll still be your baby. She'll always be your baby. And it's the same with the rest of you moms. That child is your baby. They'll always be your baby. To the day that you draw your last breath, that's your baby. I don't care if they get bigger than you or whatever, that's still your baby. And that was her baby hanging on that cross, being abused. She stood there. It tells us in John chapter 19, 25, and there stood by the cross of Jesus His mother and His mother's sister Mary, the wife of Cleophas, and Mary Magdalene, stood there watching her baby as He fulfilled God's plan. And mothers, there's a lot of time that you may have to watch your child do something, especially if they're serving God. That is kind of heart-wrenching sometimes, because God has a plan for them. And sometimes it's hard. And there may be times that you have to stand there and you watch your child and they've gotten into big problems because of something they did that was wrong. But it's still your child. It's going to hurt. I remember going to court several years ago and being on a jury, and these two young men had been arrested for stopping cars going down the street and robbing the people. I mean, it was modern day highway robbery is what it really was. And I remember the mama of the one boy getting up. "It wasn't my son. It couldn't have been my son." But yet it was him. But she couldn't believe it. She couldn't accept it. They're your child, and you love them. And there may be times as a mom that you go through these events and it's heart-wrenching. But the other thing we have to do is we have to commit those children to God. Commit those children to God, to His care, His keeping, to God's guidance. And we do our best as moms and as dads to raise that child in the way that they should go, and to see that they get the things that they need to help them to have a good life. We all want our children to have a better life than we had. That's the one thing I think every parent desires, is for my child to have a better life than I had. Because we love them. And then it comes down to the fact that even though we're talking about moms today, we have to stop just a moment and talk about the fact that we also have a Heavenly Father who loves us. And He so loved us, no matter how mean, rotten, ugly, despicable that we can get sometimes as human beings, He loved us so much that He sent that Son, Jesus, to die on the cross for us. And that Mary, His natural mother, would have to endure the hardships and the heartache that she went through so that we could have that opportunity to have eternal life with Him. That's love. And He loved us that much. Moms, you have a special place in all of our hearts. And as I close today, I want to give special honor to all of our mothers who've gone on before us. Some of us are here today because we had a godly mother or a godly grandmother that prayed for us, that raised us up in the way that we should go. And Father, I thank you today for our mothers that are here. I just ask, Father, today a special blessing upon each one of them. Father, that you would meet the needs in their lives, Father. And Father, help them, whether they're young or older today and they're here, that they still have an influence on their children's lives, Father. And Father, help them to have that influence for good and for you. And I give you praise, Jesus, for what you're doing. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Hallelujah.